What a winter, or lack thereof. No snow at Christmas. Essentially, no safe ice January 1st. On March 1st, I was out playing golf in 70-degree weather and shore fished for walleyes the day before the Minnesota season closed. What a weird winter, which has me wondering, how will all of that impact our fishing opener and the wider fishing season? So today, a few answers from the guy who might just know. At the very least, Minnesota Regional Fisheries Manager Mark Bacigalupi should have a pretty good guess as we get ready to start a new fishing season. I'm Bill Shirk. I fish, I hunt, I camp, and I tell stories. Welcome to the Minnesota Bound Podcast, the stories behind the stories. Well, Mark, thanks for joining today. You know, you started in the Brainerd Lakes Area's fishery group as the manager there. You recently were promoted to the Northwest Regional Fisheries Manager. And I'm kind of curious, did you need to move from Brainerd with the new job?
No, I was able to stay in Brainerd here, which was a great adaptation that we have in our work world today. I have a seventh grader and a ninth grader in school. And so I am driving up to Bemidji a fair bit and have meetings around the Northwest. So I'm getting a little windshield time in, but it's great to get out there and see the country too.
So we will talk a lot about your job and your role and your goals, but I want to kind of go back in time to you as a kid. What was growing up for you like? What did things look like? Pine City is where you grew up, correct?
Yep, you got it. Pine City. And so Cross Lake, my parents are both teachers. And so, you know, we weren't rich or anything, but we had this great place on Cross Lake. And it's, you know, part of the Snake River system. And Pakegama Lake is connected there. And I was one of my brothers and sisters that were out there getting dirty and muddy and seeing what washed up on shore and fishing off the dock and just doing that exploring. And fishing was just it's one of those things where you just some people just sticks for, and some people are like, yeah, that was fun, but I don't need to do that again. For me, it just became one of those things I had to do a lot.
Were you thinking growing up that, gosh, someday I'm going to make a career of this?
Yeah, I think like a lot of people, you're thinking, gee, what could I do that's outside and stuff? And I was pretty good at school, so I could do the math and science. And then you started to narrow things down. I did a little bit of study on the West Coast in Oregon. And, you know, I watched all the TV shows about whales and dolphins and the Mutual of Omaha, you know, Wild Kingdom.
Sure. And Marty that was Stouffer a big one. Shows,
Marty Stouffer's show and stuff. So, yeah. Fish and animals. So I studied out west, or you know, did a summer class and learned a little bit about marine biology. But really, you know, in terms of jobs outdoors and doing biology, there's not that much for like private research institutions. So there's academic, so there's universities and colleges, and there's government work. And so once you start really looking into it, fisheries management is one of the places you can get a job. And so, that was a great fit for me too. And I eventually ended up getting back to Minnesota to do that.
All right. Totally random here, but when you were studying in Oregon, did you have a chance ever to go to the Big Bend pool by chance?
No, I knew people from that area. We're in Coos Bay. It was a marine station.
Yep.
And so you're kind of sequestered there for, for that summer, which was really neat because it was about kind of meeting your classmates and stuff like that too. But, taking a variety of classes about marine birds, marine mammals, and I had a fisheries course too.
Totally random, that Big Bend pool. Yeah. I was out there fishing one time, maybe on the North Umpqua, with Frank Moore, who was a casting mentor. And this pool, all the steelhead gather. It's just this gin clear pool, and they have a fish watch there. You know, and it's a guy who like has spent years and years just sitting at the pool, sort of protecting the fish from poachers. And I can't think of his name, but he was, I think, originally from Minnesota, and he just sort of fell in love with this pool and just made his life there, just hanging out next to the water, keeping the bad guys away. So very interesting. All right. So you get into fisheries. First job out of college or out of school was?
Well, I had a year. Let's see. I have to think about this. I had a year of in sea lamprey control in Marquette, Michigan.
Oh, wow.
That was after grad school at the University of Minnesota.
And even after doing that job, you wanted to stay in fisheries.
Yeah, sea lampreys are an interesting critter. And, you know, that's one of the, they've kind of got that recipe, you know, it's an ongoing fight out there, but they've kind of got it under control, and lake trout are bouncing back in the Great Lakes.
So you get through that job.
Yeah. And so back to Minnesota. So around 2001, back at the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and I was a specialist in the West Metro office. It was in Eden Prairie at the time. Now it's in Shakopee. And so, you know, we were checking out the lakes and rivers in Hennepin and Scott and Carver counties. And, you know, there's more lakes than you might think in that area. And I had 4.5 good years there. And I got a promotion in Waterville as the assistant supervisor, fishery supervisor there. I lived in Mankato at the time. So now that I'm in the Northwest, following Brainerd, I guess I've worked in all four regions of the state.
And you and I met and got to know each other in the Brainerd area, you know, just talking about some of the challenges with walleyes in that part of the world and some of the ups and downs with the fishing reports there. But now you've taken this job overseeing the Northwest region. It's a larger role, I presume.
Yeah, the Northwest has those big waters, and a lot of visitors, of course, come into that area. Now, visitors come to Brainerd, of course. And in Brainerd, you have your quote-unquote Great Lakes. And, you know, the thing is, they're about a tenth of the size of the big waters in the Northwest, like Upper Red and Lake of the Woods and Leech, of course. So it's a lot of responsibility. And even after 16 months of this year, I feel like I'm not quite settled yet.
And your job, how do you summarize it? What's your goal?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, so I have, I'm in charge of the supervisors for the 7 different areas in the Northwest. And if I just, hopefully I don't miss any here, you know, we're talking about Walker, Park Rapids, Baudette, Bemidji, out west, Glenwood, Fergus Falls, and Detroit Lakes. And so, you know, you've got a lot of water bodies in those areas. And so, if issues are boiling up to me, that's something we can work across divisions on, you know, some certain things. We're working on, you know, now I'm, you know, I got to get my hands on some fish today, but that was the first time in a while. But we're really trying to just make sure that those area supervisors in those 7 areas have the tools and the budget at their disposal to do their jobs and have them cleared of some of the difficulties that pop up along the way.
Well, when you talk about those bodies of water or those regions, holy cow. I mean, some of the most famous great fisheries on the planet.
Yeah, that's right. Destinations, you know, that people are going to travel from a ways to fish and always come back home to, you know, to carry on those great traditions. Maybe it's opener or maybe it's Memorial Day or Labor Day. And certainly a responsibility to keep those as in tip-top shape or as good as they can be anyways.
All right. So the reason we wanted to talk today was a little bit about weather. I don't know if you've noticed, but it's been a little bit of an unusual run here.
We need
to thank a couple of sponsors who helped make the podcast happen. But when we come back, I want to get into the weather and talk about some of your impressions and how weather impacts our fisheries and what this stretch might have done for our 2024 season. Sound like a deal?
Yeah, I'll give it my best shot.
That's awesome. All right. Mark Machagalupi is my guest today. We are talking about fishing and the state of Minnesota fisheries. I'm Bill Shirk, the man about the woods, and this is the Minnesota Bound podcast, the stories behind the stories. And we have so many great sponsors who help get us to you each week. Up first, I want to thank our good friends at Kinetico. You know, spring is very close, if not already here. You know, the Shirk family, we are back out fishing and playing soccer outdoors, and the Shirk boys still never leave home without filling their water bottles. Really, it's the Kinetico water. We have Kinetico whole home water systems both at home and at the cabin. We also installed Kinetico's K5 drinking water system. And let me tell you, this stuff makes a big difference. The Kinetico installations were both quick and easy. No more stinky, foul well water. We now have Kinetico soft water and also Kinetico's K5 drinking water. No more bottled water, just great drinking water right out of the K5 tap. Our laundry, it no longer smells funny, and the Kinetico water cleaned up the showers and our dishes. The world's most efficient, worry-free water system. Visit Kinetico.com to find a dealer near you and join the Kinetico family. Also, we'd like to thank our newest sponsor, Minnesota Masonic Charities.
When people think of the Freemasons, they often think of secret handshakes and unusual hats, and of course, the pancake breakfast. Minnesota Masonic Charities would prefer that you think about the work that they do right here in our community. Places like the Masonic Cancer Center at the University of Minnesota or the Masonic Children's Hospital and the Masonic Home in Bloomington. They are just a few examples of the important work that the Freemasons support here in Minnesota. As part of the largest fraternal organization in the world, Masons have consistently answered the call when it comes to charitable needs. I am happy that Minnesota Masonic Charities has chosen Minnesota Bound and this podcast as a place to help spread the word. We look forward to learning so much more about their many programs here in the weeks to come.
And a big shout out to our friends at Lakes Gas. Hey there, Bill Shirk, the man about the woods. Propane, it's clean, efficient fuel produced right here in the United States. Schedule your propane service with a friend. Lakes Gas, a family-owned provider serving the upper Midwest for more than 60 years. 54 convenient locations in Minnesota and Wisconsin. Now with offices in North Dakota and South Dakota, too. Lakes Gas employees live in the communities they serve, so you can expect personalized service from professionals. Oh, and the Lakes Gas offers competitive pricing without all the extras that tend to drive up fuel prices. Safe, dependable service. Lakes Gas, the right choice for your home, business, or farm. Visit lakesgas.com and join the family.
All right. Mark Machagalupi is overseeing Minnesota's fisheries in the northwest portion of our state. But you're also keeping an eye on this weather we've had this year. Holy cow, what a winter. Obviously, we had a major impact during the ice fishing season. I mean, I would guess that it's a fraction of people who got out ice fishing this winter?
Yeah, you know, people did get a late start, that was for sure. But what a contrast we had from this winter compared to what it was two winters ago and three winters ago, where you had deep snow and a long winter. Boy, just 180 degree change from that. But, you know, with the once we did get some ice on those lakes, at least you could travel around, and you know, because there wasn't that deep snow. So it was different. You know, think of the resorts out there that were plowing, you know, paths like crazy to have places where people could plop their wheelhouses and stuff like that 2 years ago. And now you once you did get that fishable ice, you had really pretty good access throughout those water bodies. Of course, there was really uneven conditions, so it really did keep pressure down to a large degree in a lot of places.
So you would expect that has some sort of impact, potentially positive, on fish size or fish populations. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would say in most places, you know, we have creel studies that measure those things on the large lakes, especially. We can't do them everywhere. They're hard and expensive to do, labor intensive. But yeah, I would say that harvest was, well, okay. We have to be careful about the generalizations. Sure. I saw a lot of water bodies you drive by and there was nothing going on. Okay. But, what's funny is, you know, a place like Upper Red Lake, we had a record high harvest in the winter in that water body. And again, it was accessibility. And the bite was really good. The February bite usually just dies off and is dead in February on that water body. And we had record harvest then. Probably, if I had to guess, something to do with, you know, more sunlight coming through, or, you know, just lack of snow. And then again, because it was accessible to people, that was the best place in the state to go drive your truck somewhere and plop down and fish comfortably.
It sure seemed like it. Of course, we started a new project alongside Rapala, a new ice fishing program, a weekly program that included ice reports and fishing reports, which I was responsible for. And boy, it sure seemed like we went back to two lakes, Lake of the Woods and Red Lake. Lake of the Woods, Red Lake, because they had some safe ice and people were reporting really good success. But I kind of want to get past ice fishing now as we look towards open water. And there was something you talked about with Red Lake, and that's light getting through the ice. I mean, we had light snowpack this year. We didn't have a ton of ice. What is the impact when you have a winter where sunlight gets through to the lake all winter?
Yeah. So the lack of snow depth, you're going to have those plants stay green and, you know, maybe get a start on the spring plant growth. Fishermen are searching for those, weed lines and green plants when they're fishing, because all sorts of different critters are attracted to those areas. You know, back to the conditions that we're talking about here, you know, recall that we were essentially in a drought in a lot of areas of the state last year. So you're going in with low waters. We had almost no snow this whole winter, and so you didn't add any water to the system. Thank goodness we got a couple of rains around here to get water levels up. So, you know, part of the deal is what's going on inside the lakes, but part of this equation is anglers' access to water bodies is going to be the major thing that we're thinking about here. You know, some of those shallow flats are even a little shallower, you know, and you're on plane on your boat in those areas that are 5 feet normally. You better be a little bit careful about that. And maybe just putt across those sand flats or that gravel area, because and then, you know, of course, some of those boat ramps that are always shallow might not work at all in a year like this.
And some of that is just because we didn't get the snowpack this year, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're we're coming through a drought and we just didn't get any moisture to help us out in that realm. So we have, 4 weeks here until the opener, 4 Saturdays until the opener, and we're still hoping for some rain to help us out here and get the rivers flowing into those water systems, raise some water levels.
So what do you think fishing will be like on the opener? And it's a question people are asking. Obviously some of this has to do with water temps. I don't know. Personally, I think the fishing is going to be pretty good, right?
Yep. We always have these, it's the age old, it's kind of like the NFL draft. We have a little too long to think about it. So I guess I was trying to string together a couple of thoughts. We had below water, but then at least, in a lot of those places where you have shallow lakes that are boom bust fisheries, well, those didn't winter kill then because we didn't get low oxygen conditions. Water temperature is always one of those big things. When where are the plant beds and is the flow from a river system coming into a lake attracting fish? We think about the spawning runs a lot in our section of fisheries because we still have a walleye production program where we're taking eggs and hatching fry and trying to grow fingerlings. So fishermen are thinking about if walleyes are coming off of the spawning flats or shoals, or if they were way up the river, and kind of where they're going to settle out. So some of these, quote unquote, early springs, it's actually, I think it's kind of harder to predict where those fish end up because they're maybe a little more post-spawn, maybe just a week early instead of like a month early that we were kind of worried about a month ago or so, because we've had some of these cold spells here. But this is a little bit where biology ends, and people that just spend a lot of time on the water probably know more than we do.
Well, so you were out today on the water. I'm guessing you were dealing with the spawn. Is this timing about right, or is this early?
Yeah, we were coming. This is always the debate. Of course, you have those early winters, but photo period still determines to a large degree when walleyes and muskies and critters are spawning. So I would just say we're a little on the early side, and now we've had a couple of these cold fronts come through, and it's really starting to turn into more of a quote unquote normal spring here. The walleye runs are coming towards their peak or have peaked in several parts of the state. We have, 11 spawning walleye egg takes around the state now. And we're in good shape. The quotas are starting to be met, and we're not out of fish yet. It's not like we're at the end of the spawning run. So
you think about it, 4 weeks, if we're at the peak, so some of those females will recuperate a little bit and maybe be hungry by opener.
Yeah, that's right. It might not just be the males ready to go. The females may be putting the feed bag on by that time.
But again, some of that depends on weather and water temps. If it stays cold, I know here in the Twin Cities, we have a freeze warning for tonight, which, I don't know, last time I saw one of those. But so that's not going to do anything to help warm waters up, and temps are going to stay cool. So it's a little bit of a crystal ball to your point.
Yeah, I don't know if humans or the critters really know which way is up right now. It's been kind of some wide swings, and boy, the wind has really been blowing.
Yes, it has. In fact, Mr. Shara walked into the office today, and I was laughing a little bit because his hair was pointed all four directions of the compass. And I said, "You look windblown." And he said, "Have you been outside?" Kind of had a laugh about that. All right. So, opener, will you be out having fun, or will you be working?
Well, I am going to be getting some fishing in if it depends on my my kids' basketball schedule. So it's walleye fishing season, but it's also AAU basketball season.
Oh, good Lord.
So maybe we're looking at midweek type stuff if I could sneak out in the evening.
You know, I was trying to figure out what opener was like for the Shirk family last year, and I actually had to click back into my calendar thinking I'm getting old because I couldn't remember. And there I saw it, you know, Bennett Shirk had a big soccer tournament. Sports definitely can get in the way of some of this stuff, but, you know, you try and have some sort of balance, right? Life is full of chapters. Yeah, I do a lot of fishing, but I'm also enjoying the heck out of chasing the boys around and watching them play and coaching. Now, understanding mine are a little bit older than yours at 13 and 15, kind of getting to the backside of that bell curve. And at some point, I'm going to have nothing but time for fishing. So it's all chapters, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I was, you know, as a dad, you're kind of like, gee, I don't get time to do my hobbies sometimes. And now I've got these teenagers that don't really want to hang out with dad. And then it's kind of flipped already real quickly on me. Like, gee, I wish the boys wanted to go fishing today type of thing.
Yeah. Well, so maybe we'll see out. I know the Shirks were planning on our regular. We'll be up on Gull Lake. You know, a lot of openers were just chasing crappies with the boys and leaving the walleye fishing until a few weeks later. But this year we might be chasing a few walleyes, and the Shirk boys have a soft spot for the big pike in Gull Lake too. So it's active. They get to be out and casting a little bit. They still enjoy that.
Yep. And, there's the bass fishing leagues out there, so we've gotten a little bit of taste of that. But you're right, it's always a balance. We're looking at it. It's definitely run by the calendar, right? We're going to sneak in up to Rainy Lake here, or do we have to move that? Or, and mom's schedule. Good thing we have a good scheduler on the mom's side. So.
Yes. Absolutely. All right. Well, when we come back, I've got a couple of questions for you on the state of our state's fisheries. And then I want to talk about a few of your favorite memories. Sound like a plan?
Sounds good.
All right. Mark, appreciate it. We need to thank some sponsors here who help us get the Minnesota Bound podcast out every week. You know, up first, we want to say thank you to our longtime partners at Star Bank.
Hi, everybody. Ron Shera here again with another nifty story, this one about my favorite bank, the story of Star Bank. There's 10 of them in Minnesota, but here's where the plot thickens. A Star Bank is more than money. A Star Bank cares about its customers, cares about the community, whether it's town parades or the kids' baseball team. Why? Because Star Banks are locally owned. They treat you right. Quite a tale, wouldn't you say? How do I know? Because Star Bank is also our bank at Ron Shera Productions. Just another story with a happy ending. Star Bank, the bank that cares. Member FDIC. To learn more online, go to star.bank.
Also, it's boating season, so we want you to know a little bit more about your boat club.
Got the winter blues? Start planning your summer. Plan on fun and get out in the water with your boat club. Your boat club offers boat club memberships and daily rentals with access to over 40 bodies of water and over 400 brand new boats to enjoy. Whether you want to cruise on a pontoon, create waves in a speedboat, or reel in a big one on a fishing boat, your boat club has got you covered. Unlimited boating memberships are available now, starting at just $1.99 a month after a one-time initiation. Life is better on the water. Find out more today at yourboatclub.com.
And a thank you to Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Our sponsor, Tito's Handmade Vodka, is America's original craft vodka, distilled from corn and naturally gluten-free. Over 25 years ago, the first batch of Tito's was made in the heart of Austin, Texas. And tomorrow's batch will be too. Tito's tastes just as good with tap water as it does with your favorite mixer. Tito's makes the good stuff for the good times, too. You can find recipes, videos, and more at Tito'sVodka.com. True adventures are crafted together. And Tito's Handmade Vodka is also pledging to protect where we play by working with nonprofits to protect and enhance our national parks for the present and future generations to come. To learn more, visit Tito'sEnvironmental.com.
Mark Bacigalupi is the Northwest Regional Fisheries Manager here in Minnesota. He's also a guy who loves to fish when the family schedule allows. A couple of quick questions, work related. We just heard all this news that some of our hatcheries are going to get a facelift. How important are the hatcheries to our state?
Yeah, they are still very important. You know, we have we're blessed with great natural resources in this state, and most of the fish species reproduce really well on their own. And some, you know, we'd just like to see that boost in opportunity in some places. And so trout and walleyes and muskie, where you do see some reproductive hurdles out there in the wild, that's where we've come in and supplemented with stocking in some of these water bodies in Minnesota to boost those numbers and get, you know, opportunities where they weren't in the past. And so you think about our hatchery system, and there really hasn't been major investments in these buildings over the years. They're 50s era or 70s era facilities, and the pump goes and we can replace that pump. But, you know, by and large, the buildings are really old, and so it's tough to go to the legislature or to ask for bonding dollars for those. But we were very successful in this last session, and we're lucky to have, you know, in some places to really get some major projects off the ground.
Well, and stocking is important. I don't know that everyone pays as much attention to that stuff as they should, but the stocking in this state provides opportunity, and not just walleyes, but a lot of different species. So I'm excited to hear that, you know, those facilities are going to get an upgrade and we're going to continue. A funny story, years ago, I was trout fishing with a guy and we got on the topic of keeping fish, and, you know, he laid this little 10-inch brown trout back into the stream we were fishing, and I asked him if he ever kept trout. He went, "Oh gosh, no, this is such a, you know, sacred fish. If I want to keep a wild fish, you know, I'll just go try and catch a walleye someplace." And I giggled to myself a little bit, thinking, well, wait a second, there's a fair chance that walleye he thinks he's going to go catch it was a stocked fish. Like, it's a difference in opinion, but stocking our lakes is proving to be important. And I think especially with the pressure that our bodies of water are now under, we're hard on our resources as a fishing public. I really feel that, and I feel like I see that. And stocking, I think, is just an important part of the game for Minnesota these days.
Yep, that's true. You know, as a fisheries manager, we don't always like to admit it, but there's a limited number of levers that we have to pull or to lift or to drop. Stocking is still one of those things that's in a lot of our management plans. And we've tried different things over the years, and we've kind of fine-tuned where it works and doesn't work. And so, yeah, just to be clear, you know, I appreciate you've kind of made that caveat for us, because we do know that, you know, the big natural lakes are naturally reproducing those walleyes and muskies out there, and that's what people are going to chase. But it's the 1,000 acre lakes or the 500 acre lakes that there frankly wouldn't be very much of that. And a lot of people are still interested in being able to go chase those favorite fish in those places. And so they need a little help. And so that's where we're happy to do that work.
Yeah. And for anyone out there who questions that, you know, an example for me, I live very near Lake Independence on the west side of the Twin Cities. And during an average winter, you know, you'll drive by that lake and look at the amount of ice houses. And I just kind of think to myself, that poor body of water, those fish don't even have a chance. And so for me, I look at that and say, well, yeah, but that's an opportunity. People are getting out. I'm happy that people are fishing. So that lake gets periodically stocked, and there's a reason for it. That's just one of whatever, 5,000 examples, right? But we just have an impact on our fisheries. All right, I want to move on. The other topic everyone is talking about, and obviously everyone's got an opinion about it, is changing limits. And this is something you and I have talked about in the past. What are we going to do about limits in this state?
Yeah, and you may be talking more a little bit about the walleye bag limit. We've had those ongoing discussions in our walleye work group. We've had them at the round table. There's been some, you know, chatter on podcasts and stuff like that. Those discussions are ongoing. I think we think in the DNR that those discussions have been really helpful. We're a walleye regulation statewide is as much about the social dynamics and fairness and being a little bit on the conservative side as it is about counting the number of fish that you might be saving on a given water body. And so those are all parts of the equation. Over the 5 or 7 years that we've been talking about this, we have had a few points where we're able to collect information. For example, in 2019, we collected anglers' opinions of out on creel surveys of what they thought of that. And I will say that opinion has shifted a little bit towards favoring tighter bag limits than they have in the past. Recall a while ago, the hardcore random response survey from licensed anglers returned the answer that it was about 30-30-30 out there in terms of support or non-support or kind of not sure. And that's actually, even in that survey, which was redone, that is returning more answers that there's some concern out there and they're wondering if a tighter limit would help.
You know, Mark, I don't pretend to be an expert on any of this or have all the answers, but I have been listening to a lot of the information. And for me, there's a number that strikes me. Some of the research shows that to have a positive impact on walleye populations and lakes, the number needs to be at 2, which is something that's not a number anyone is discussing, you know, but keeping four fish versus 2, right, is a big gap. So I feel like that there's a lot more ahead in this discussion.
Yep, absolutely. You know, I don't think, I'm obviously we're not ready to go towards 2 statewide. This is just a good chance to talk about how populations work and how information is collected about fisheries, about fish populations. And so that is what we are really trying to do, is just continue the conversation. Again, not nothing with no agenda on the table at this point in terms of from the department standpoint, but a dialogue has been opened and it is ongoing.
And you get into a room of people who are passionate about this topic and holy cow, they start talking.
Certainly plenty of things to talk about. So, and it's difficult because people's fishing experience out there, and it's a very close and people are devote a lot of time and money and thought into it too. And so, you know, they should be heard and let's listen to what they're seeing and observing and then share the information we have as well.
Well, appreciate your time today. I don't want to hold you up too long, but before you go, I've got two questions for you, and they're questions that I tend to ask all my guests. The first one is this. Do you have one piece of outdoor gear that is just so dear to you, so special? I don't know, whether it's a favorite fishing rod, a family legacy shotgun that's been passed down, a favorite backpack you made memories with. Is there one piece of gear you've got that just sort of wows you?
Well, that's a good one, Bill. Geez, I'm going through things in my mind. I'll have to say I have this canoe that I got. It's an Old Town Penobscot, and I got it in grad school. And I couldn't really afford it then, but it was an old beat up rental then.
Wow.
And I still have that. So I suppose it was 1990. It was beat up in 1998. And we've taken a lot of Boundary Waters trips with that. And it's not Kevlar, so it's heavy and it's not pretty really anymore. But we put a good number of miles on that. And I guess put on the spot with a quick one. That's what I'll go with, my canoe.
It may not be the shiniest, but it's your favorite.
That's right. A lot of miles. And then, you know, it's blown off the truck a couple of times and you know, that kind of thing.
But you make memories with it, right? Which is what's so important. All right. I love that. That's a great answer. We've never had canoe before. The other question for you, changing from a thing to a moment, is do you have one memory outdoors that you feel like really changed you, or just a moment that in your mind you constantly go back to, just some point on a hunt or just hiking or whatever it might be that you feel like changed you?
Yeah. I will say that, you know, I talked about growing up on Cross Lake in Pine City, but my uncles, were the ones that got me out fishing. So I mentioned the canoe. That wasn't the canoe that they brought me in. My uncles got me into the Boundary Waters in those canoes. And I'll just say, you know, you learn about, you know, putting some work in to something and then getting rewarded at the end. You know, we had, but for some reason, they didn't go on the easier Boundary Waters routes. We always went in the Angleworm Portage, and it's a 2 mile entry portage there. And so, but then once you were there, we had a great route and great fishing all the time. And so I'll just say, you know, reaching the end of that Angleworm trail and catching walleyes on Angleworm were with my uncles was a real special time. And probably, you know, that was formative in terms of like, hey, this is what I like to do, even though sometimes it's hard.
Yeah. You got to earn it. And on that portage, it just happens to be a kick in the teeth.
And sometimes there's grouse on that portage too.
Shh, don't give away the secrets. Mark, sure appreciate it. I hope I get to see you on the water this summer. And I know your job is not always easy, but keep up the good work and keep up the good fight.
Thanks, Bill. Let's make that happen.
All right. Mark Bacigalupi, Northwest Minnesota Regional Fisheries Manager. I have to get used to the title. I'm so used to you being our Brainerd guy. So thanks for the time today and the advice to everyone else who's going to be out for opener this year. Be safe out there. Make sure you've got your life vests along. They don't do any good sitting in a drawer in the boat. Put them on and wear them and have a great, successful opener. I'm Bill Shirk, the man about the woods. And that is today's episode of the Minnesota Bound Podcast, the stories behind the stories. One last shout out to all the great sponsors who help us get to you each week. Our newest sponsor, the Minnesota Masonic Charities, Connecticut Water, Lakes Gas, Star Bank, Your Boat Club, and Tito's Handmade Vodka. Until next week, don't forget to introduce a kid to the great outdoors.